So let's just wrap up some of what we were talking about 2 days ago, and then we'll go back to wrap up what we were talking about yesterday. Okay, so just 2 days ago, we were discussing the difference between Shechem, where it says that there were a lot of Rotzchim in Shechem, versus a lot of Rotzchim in Gilad. Right, so what did the Orach Laner, well, before we get to the Orach Laner, what did the Marsha say was the basic difference? You guys remember? He says definitely there had to have been more murderers in Gilad than there were in Shechem. Correct, because then the Gemara had a kasha originally. Like, what do we need three Arei Miklat on Eivrei Yarden for, and we only need three in the entirety of Eretz Yisrael? So he answered that, and so the Gemara answered, because in Gilad there are many Rotzchim. Right, then the Gemara asked, how come it was such a short trip from one Arei Miklat to the other in the middle of the country? So they said, because a lot of Rotzchim in Shechem. So the Marsha is just pointing out that if you have to explain that there were many more Rotzchim in Gilad than there were in Shechem, because otherwise the Gemara's Kasha is not answered anymore, because now you're back to the original Kasha. So if it was the same amount of extra murderers then, so you could ask, well, then how come there's a disproportionate amount of Arei Miklat in Gilad and not near Shechem? So that's basically the way the Marsha explains it. But the Aruch Laner explained a little bit differently based on the drusha that the Gemara uses for Gilad and the drusha that the Gemara uses for Shechem. By Gilad, it refers to what type of Rotzchim? Right? Akuvim, it says that they were ambushers. They would ambush the guy, and that's usually done one person or two people, and the person who is, you know, on the hook, the person who kills him is on the hook for the entire murder. Mashenkin and Gilad, it refers to them as gedudim. They were troops. They were large groups. They were gang violence against people, and that, according to the way we paskin, based on the Mishnah and Sanhedrin, we paskin that if 10 people join together to kill somebody, none of them gets an onesh, because there's a gzeiras hakasuv that you have to kill kol nefesh, you have to kill the entire individual, and if someone else joined in with you to kill the person, then that doesn't constitute something that's a punishable offense. Mashenkin, we pointed out that's only bidei adam, but if it's bidei shemayim, everybody agrees that even if you do a small something to shorten the person's life, that's still considered an act of ritzicha, and you are punished for such an act. Okay, just one last ta'ara that we had, which is shayach to daf yudam et aleph, and then maybe we'll. There's other things to say, but I'm not sure exactly what order to go in. So we'll play it by ear a little bit. So one more ha'ar in terms of this, that the Chuvas HaRadvaz points out that the Gemara has a kasha here. How is Chevron considered one of the Arei Miklat? Didn't we give Chevron to Kalev ben Yefuna? Right, so the Gemara asks for Chevron here, Miklat hu v'haksiv v'yitnu l'Kalev es Chevron kasher diber Moshe. Right, he had made a deal with Moshe Rabbeinu that he was going to receive the city of Chevron. Why? I'm sure you guys know why. Because he went to Davin by the Maris HaMachpelah, and therefore he was Zochet to Chevron as part of his Nachla. So Amar Abaye Parvadah Dichsiv Veste Ha'ir Veschatzereha Nosnu L'Kalev Ben Yefuna. Right, so he says, so what is he referring to? Some type of a suburb of Chevron is what was given to Kalev, but not the main city of Chevron. The main city of Chevron was given to The main city of Chevron was used as an Ir Miklat and was given over to the Levium as an Ir Miklat for the Levium to live in and for Rotzeach to run there. It was only the suburbs of Chevron which were given over to Kalev. One of the Sfarim I looked in, I forgot where I saw it, points out that based on this, you have to realize that the Maris HaMachpelah must not have been in Chevron proper either. Meaning, the Maris HaMachpelah wasn't in the Ir Miklat of Chevron. It had to have been in the outskirts, in the suburbs of Chevron. Because if it was in Chevron proper, then there's no point in him getting Chevron as a schus for having daven in the Maris HaMachpelah. So we always think that the highlight of Chevron, the biblical city of Chevron, is the Maris HaMachpelah. It's not actually 100% true. The highlight of Chevron is really that it was just at one of the Arei Miklat, and in the suburbs of Chevron exists the Maris HaMachpelah. Yeah.
Could be still the first of Chevron, that could be the area just when it was the Arei Miklat I was referring to. this thing called Chevron Rav. I'm saying it could be in perspective to the Ir Mikla of Chevron that these are called stubborn.
Yeah, for sure. I'm not saying that the Maris on the Hill wasn't in Chevron. It was in the, like, if you say where are you going today? I'm going to the city. You mean Manhattan. You don't mean you're going to Staten Island. You know, Staten Island's technically in New York City, but it's not. It's a suburb of the main city. You know, it's not the main part. So let's say, you know, to sort of make the analogy that the Maris on Machpelah would be in Staten Island, whereas the Ir Mikla would be in Manhattan. That's I think where what the Gemara is sort of saying here. Okay, Brooklyn does have a lot of cemeteries. I don't know, so maybe it was in Brooklyn. But I'm saying Brooklyn is more of a main area of New York City than Staten Island, so that's why I went with that one. Right, so that's already old news. It doesn't really smell so bad in Staten Island anymore. That's already from 20, 25 years ago. Okay. So just one more ha'ara about Chevron. Says the Tshuvas HaRadvaz, I don't know if you got a chance to see it, the Tshuvas HaRadvaz points out from a parallel sugya in Maseches Erechin that you can have a raya here for Hilchos Purim. You have a raya here for when you read the Megillah in Chevron. There are a number of cities which we have a suffix whether or not to read the Megillah on the 14th or the 15th. So Chevron is one of those cities that's on the list of being a suffix. So what's the suffix? We want to know. We're not sure if it was Mukefes Choma Mimos Yoshua Ben Nun. Right, as I'm sure you know, what we call Shushan Purim. Why do we call it Shushan Purim? What?
That's when the people in Shushan rested.
Right, meaning Shushan had a second day of fighting. Outside of the first day of fighting, so there was a special din of there. So why then do the cities that have walls from the times of Yeshua ben Nun keep Shushan Purim? It should only be in Shushan. So what's the answer?
Nobody lives in Shushan.
Nobody lives in Shushan. Perhaps, but what's the actual answer? What do you mean by that? No, you told me the real answer yesterday. Right. Meaning, since the whole Nes of Purim happened while we were in Golus, and we're going to have a special miracle commemorating everything has to do with Golus, it's like a zilzul to the covenant of Eretz Yisrael, and therefore, when the Anshei Knas HaGdola or whoever exactly set up all the dinim of Purim, they decided that they wanted to give covenant to Eretz Yisrael. So they said all walled cities from the times of Yeshua ben Nun. They're not going to say all walled cities like Shushan from the times of Achashverosh, the times of Mordechai and Esther, they say from the times of Yoshua ben Nun, to sort of give extra kavod to Eretz Yisrael. So that's where the whole din of walled cities celebrating Shushan Purim as opposed to celebrating regular Purim. Yeah. Right. But the question is, where did they get that idea from? Why? It doesn't say from most Yoshua ben Nun. It says walled cities. In the walled cities, they observed Shushan Purim even then, but at least the timing should have had shaykhus to Mordechai and Esther. I mean, I'm sure there were many cities in Eretz Yisrael that when Yehoshua conquered Eretz Yisrael, they had walls, you know, and you know, it's unknown whether they continued to have the walls. I don't know. I'm just saying, like they dafka chose that time, or I'm sure, what I actually meant to say was the opposite. I'm sure there were many cities in Eretz Yisrael that since Yehoshua had conquered them, had built walls, but, you know, so in the times of Mordechai and Esther, they had walls, but in the times of Yehoshua ben Nun, they did not. So therefore, those cities, you would think, we should celebrate Shushan Purim in those. But we say, no, it should be from the times of Yoshua. We should remember the Kibush Eretz Yisrael. We shouldn't forget that just because Hashem did an ace for us in Chutz Laaretz, that Eretz Yisrael is not is still the... We shouldn't forget that Eretz Yisrael is still the Iker. Yeah?
Of having a wall, it's just that there was a wall. It's not the same wall.
It should be... Well, I don't want to get into all the details of what's a walled city. Let's just say for now, it's a walled city from the times of Yeshua ben Nun. And on, I don't know if that's, they could, I'm sure they could touch up the wall from time to time, you know, to keep it from crumbling. But anyway, the Gemara in Erechin discusses the same thing that we have over here, which is that the city shouldn't be too big, shouldn't be too small, shouldn't be what we call krachim gedolim, right? Should be rather ayaros beinonios. Ayaros beinonios, so I don't know if you have the fancy Lakute Rashi or Mosaf Rashi, but if you do, take a look at when the Gemara quotes the Rashi's in Erechin. So Rashi, Divra Maschil, Right, we'll do all of them. Lo tirin kitanim levishen are miklat uboinan shi hesham yishuv lebayis manos lerotzkim. Right, so we want to build something shayach that the rotzkim can live there. They want to have a real, you know, settlement that they can have their needs taken care of. And then v'lo krachim gedolim lefishem iskatzim sham mikol makomos l'schora v'tei regel goel adam mitzuyisham v'yarov esarotzeach v'yargenu. Right, so we're afraid that basically the goel adam is going to show up and kill the rotzeach. And then we say, Ella, what should you make them? Ayaros beinonios. So what does Rashi say there? Two words. Below choma. Apparently, according to Rashi, the definition of a medium-sized city is that there's no wall. So if the definition is that there's no wall, and Chevron was one of the Ari Miklat, so it's a Raya Brura, according to Rashi, that there was no wall around Chevron. And when did we set up the Ari Miklat? Who was the guy who was in charge of that? Yoshua ben Nun. So the Radvaz in his tshuva wants to say it's impossible that Chevron counts as a walled city for the purposes of Shushan Purim. Must be that you're supposed to celebrate regular Purim in Chevron. Nevertheless, there's a whole list in Shulchan Aruch, in Tafresh Peches, and the Sefer Piskei Tshuvos. He doesn't really quote a lot of sources. He just points out that the minhag in many cities in Eretz Yisrael, including the city of Chevron, is that they lain twice. They lain on Yud Dalet with a bracha. Regular Purim they lain with a bracha, and then Shushan Purim they lain without a bracha, just in case. Really, they are considered a walled city of the time of Yoshua ben Nun. But the Piskei Tshuvos doesn't quote this Radvaz. I'm not sure why, but the Radvaz seems pretty staunch in his position that one should not observe Shushan Purim in Chevron. Okay. So that's it. That takes care of the Mar Makomos on the Shir Yud Aleph page. Just to take care of the Mar Makomos on the Shir Yud Beis page, then we'll move on a little bit. So we spoke yesterday about the din that one should not teach a Talmud she'eno hogun. Right? You guys saw that, Gemara? One should not teach students who are unfit. So Rashi in Hilchos Talmud, the Rambam in Hilchos Talmud Torah, I believe it's Perek Dalet, Halacha Aleph, Hilchos Talmud Torah, the Rambam writes that refers to someone who has bad midos. Right? It says rather you should teach Torah to someone who has either good midos, he's going on a good path, or a tam. What's a tam? What? A simpleton, right? A simpleton, nishtahin, nishtahar, as they say in Yiddish. He doesn't know who he is yet. So hopefully you'll teach him Torah. He'll find out who he is. He'll be a good guy. But not to teach Torah to somebody with bad midos or is doing averus constantly. And that's basically the definition of a Talmud Sheino Hagan according to Rashi. I keep saying Rashi. According to the Rambam, sorry. Perhaps there's a different definition that one could give to a Talmud Sheino. What is the definition of Talmud Sheino Hogun? So it's well known that there's a stira between the Gemara in Psachim and the Gemara in Brachos, right? There's a Gemara in Psachim. I didn't give you the Gemara in Brachos on the Ma'ariv Makomos, so the Gemara in Psachim on Nunam and Beis has the famous concept, and there's another place in Psachim, I think it also has it, the concept of Mitoch Shelo Lishma Ba Lishma, right? It's a very famous concept. We like to quote it all the time. That we'll do everything shalol lishma and it'll eventually be bal lishma. So, the Gemara in Brachos, I think it's Daf Yud Zayin, has a statement that a person who learns Torah shalol lishma, it's noach lo shalol nivra. It's better that he never been created. So that's a pretty harsh lashon. It's a pretty harsh attack on someone who does things shalol lishma. So on one hand, you know, we say it's okay, la'olam yasak adam etorah mitzvah shalol lishma, shemitok shalol lishma balishma. And on the other hand, we say, someone who does it shalol lishma, it's noach lo shalol nivra. So it's a very staunch stira. I keep using the word staunch. Not sure why. But there's a very straightforward contradiction between the two Gemaras, the Gemara in Brachos and the Gemara in Psachim. So Tosfos over there points out this stira, and Tosfos seems to say that it's not such a big problem. The type of shalol lishma mentioned the Gemara in Pesachim, where we say mitoch shelo lishma ba lishma, is talking about a guy who he has ulterior motives in his learning. Anybody see that Tosus, by the way? It's very important Tosus. You should check it out inside, even if don't take my word for it. He says it's not talking about somebody who just has ulterior motives in his learning. Let's say a guy wants to get a good grade on an exam, or he wants to be called rabbi. He wants people to think he's a Talmud Chacham. So even that already, that's what we say mitoch shelo lishma ba lishma. He wants people to, you know, he wants to be in the guy in the base medrash that everybody comes to ask questions to. What does this mean? What does that mean? What's this concept? You know, he wants to get the covet. He wants to get people to think that he's very scholarly and learned. However, there's a second type of shelo lishma, which is the type where we say it's noach lo shelo nivra, which is that he's learning, Dafka Tosa says, lekanter. He's trying, he just wants to be a troublemaker. He wants to use the Torah as a tool to meet nefarious ends. He wants to use the Torah as a means to make trouble, to start up with Talmid Chachamim, to start up, to tell people what to do. He really has no interest in the Torah as a regular limud. Right? So that's one type. Or he say, Tosa says, or he doesn't plan on keeping the mitzvahs that he learns. Meaning most people that are, there's pretty much, you know, very hard to find a person who has no interest whatsoever in people being mechabed them, especially for their learning. Memela, you have a guy who's wealthy and he says, I'm not interested in people being mechabed me for my wealth. Okay, that's a tremendous level to be on. But lemaisa, in learning, I think it's even harder because the lines are so blurred, right? Because there's something called kavada Torah. There's no such thing as kavada osher, right? I mean, there is a little bit. You're supposed to, you know, treat rich people with proper etiquette. But that's mostly a twofold issue. Number one is you should realize that for some reason Hashem decided to bless these people with wealth. So they must have done something to deserve it, and you should be mechabed that. And number two, there's also, you know, the guy, what constitutes onoas dvarim for a wealthy person might not constitute onoas dvarim for everybody else. So you have to be a little bit extra sensitive. If there's a person that everyone is used to treating him in a certain way, and you treat him a little less, in a little less the kavadik away, so that guy might find it insulting, even though the average person wouldn't. So you end up insulting a rich person a little bit easier than end up insulting a normal person. So that for those two reasons, there is an inyan to be mechabed them a little bit more, but in terms of Torah, there's a mitzvah d'oraisa of kavad haTorah, right? And we say that the mitzvah of kavad haTorah might even be greater than the mitzvah of limud haTorah, right? So therefore. It gets very difficult to draw the line between a person who's seeking kavod l'shem the mitzvah of kavod haTorah and a person who's seeking kavod just l'shem his own kavod. And I'm guessing that many people themselves don't know the difference. You understand what I'm trying to say? It could be the Talmud Chacham himself is hard pressed to draw the line between his own kavod and kavod haTorah. And there are certain people, I don't want to say names just because it might get misunderstood, but there are certain people who are well known that they're extremely makpid on their kavod. It's very rare nowadays to find a Talmud Chacham who's very, very makpid on his kavod. But there were certain Talmud Chacham, and there probably still are, that were known that they demanded kavod. Right? So there was a particular Talmud Chacham that I'm thinking of right now that, like, he was a Rosh Hashiva, and he'd walk in his base medrash, and if you wouldn't stand up for him while he walked past you while you were learning, he would stand there and wait for you to stand up. And if you would address him as Harav instead of Harosh Yeshiva, he would get angry at you and he would correct you. You don't call me Harav, you call me Harosh Yeshiva. And I don't know him personally, but people who knew him told me that there were, that when you dealt with him, you never had any sense that he was interested in his own covet. He said he just held that there's an inyan called kavod haTorah, and it's very much lost on today's generation because, you know, we don't have much kavod for pretty much anything. You know, look at the way people speak about the president, the way people speak about, you know, elected officials, the way people speak about, you know, rabbis in general. We just don't have a lot of kavod for people. So he's nerdy. He doesn't want the mitzvah of kavod haTorah to be completely lost on us. It's one of the tarryag mitzvos and one of the most important ones. So therefore, he decided that one of his projects in life was going to be to get people to realize that there is such a thing as kavod haTorah, and it's important that they know, right? That this person happened to be a tremendous tzaddik, but by and large, the average person, even the average Talmud Chacham, I bet you it's kind of hard to know what the difference is between his own covet and the covet that is demanded for the Torah. You know, and a lot of times it's very hard, meaning like, if you have a Rebbe or a Rav or Rosh Hashiva, and he sees, let's say, I'll just give you an example. Let's say I'll come into the Beis Medrash in you know, where I learn, and I'll see someone is using one of the Rebbeim's shtenders. So to me, and again, I might not be right about this, but Lania's Daiti, this is what I think. I don't think that a student in a yeshiva should use one of the Rebbeim shtenders. I think that's not showing proper respect. You know, and I don't even think a parent in the yeshiva should use one of the Rebbeim shtenders. So you'll say, who is this Rebbe that he's so chashiv that he thinks, you know, no one's allowed to use a shtender? So inachinami, maybe he's not so chashiv. Maybe you're right and it's not worth it. But then what are you doing sending your kid to his yeshiva? Meaning Meman of Shach, if he's worthy of kavod, so then you shouldn't be using his stuff. You should let that be miyuchad for him. And if he's not worthy of the kavod, so why are you sending your kid? Do you think he's a proper Rebbe for your son? And you send your kid to his yeshiva even though you don't think he's anybody? You know, that's not right either. So what's the difference? But for the Rebbe himself, should he care if somebody else uses a shtender? So mitzad kavod atori, he should care. Mitzad his own kavod, he knows who he is. He knows that, like, you know, probably not so worthwhile for the guy Dafka to have to give him kavod. But so that the people should know that there's a mitzvah of kavod atorah, that there's something to be said about that. So it's hard to draw a balance between the two. So anyway, where am I going with all this? I just think that what Tosfos mentions, that a person who learns shelo lishma because he wants to get some kavod, he wants people to treat him with a little bit of respect. I think most Talmidei Chachamim have their lines blurred to some extent. Only people who are really tremendous Balei Midos and Balei Anava can truly draw the line. I mean, because a person who just completely throws his kavod out the window, so okay. So that's nice for you to do that, but you're not necessarily doing the world any favors. Right? If you have a Talmud Chacham, he's a legitimate Talmud Chacham, or even if he's not a legitimate Talmud Chacham, but the world thinks he's a Talmud Chacham. You know? And he basically just acts like one of the guys. So he's allowed to do that, right? He's allowed to do that, especially if he's a bigger Talmud Chacham. That's ironic. The bigger Talmud Chacham you are, the more you're allowed to be mocha on your covet. Anybody know why? The Gemara says, what's the reason a Rav Shemocha Kvoda Kvoda Mochul versus a Melech? Right? That's the distinction that the Gemara draws. A Melech is not allowed to be mocha on his covet. A parent and a Rav are allowed to be mocha on their kavod. So what's the distinction between the two? So the melech, it's not his kavod to be mocha on. We say by the melech, it's a Kadosh Baruch Hu's kavod. He has no right to be mocha on a Kadosh Baruch Hu's kavod. By the Rav, we say, and the parent, it's their own kavod. So the Gemara, so what do you mean? It's his Torah? It's the Rav's Torah? It's Hashem's Torah. So the Gemara answers, no, it's considered the Rav's Torah. It's his Torah that he should be mochel on. If he wants to be mochel on his own covet. So there are some who want to draw a distinction between a guy who's just a bucky, right? It's very rare you have a guy with such a tremendous bikiyas who doesn't have any knowledge in svarin and chiddush. So let's say you have a guy, for whatever, he has a photographic memory. He's a rabbi. He has a photographic memory. He knows tons of Torah, but he doesn't really know what to do with it. Meaning he can quote things, but he's not... doesn't have any koach achidish, he doesn't have any koach hasvara, you know, to try to do something with the Torah that he knows. So there, I've heard this said, and some I've seen it in Sfarim, some poskim want to say that guy's not allowed to be mochel on his kavod. Why not? It's not his Torah. He never made a kinyan on it. He's just repeating other people's Torah. So it's not his Torah to be mochel on. Mashenkin, someone who has a koach achidish, someone who, you know, even if he doesn't know as much as the guy with the tremendous bikiyas, so someone who has a koach achidish, someone who has the ability to take the Torah and you know, be konet with shinui, right? They say that there's certain svarim, the yeshivish way to say it is that he's konet b'shinui. You know, in halacha, there's different ways to make a kinyan on something. So if I take something that you already made and I'm mishana it a little bit, so there's some sfarim, what they'll do is they'll quote all the standard raid on everything, and then they'll say a chap at the end, right? So they say he's kone al yedei shinui, but he's still kone, Right? If a guy knows, he says over Torah, but he has his own take, he has his own twist, he has his own shir, so then he can be konal yidei shinui, so it's his Torah. So he's allowed to be mochel on his kavod because it's his Torah to be mochel on. So that's the idea. So if you're a bigger Talmud Chacham, chances are you have more of a right to be mochel on your kavod. But let's say you're this big Talmud Chacham and you basically let people treat you like you're a nobody. Are you really doing those people a big favor? Even if you're a parent, are you doing your kids a huge favor by always being mochel on your kavod? The kid grows up thinking there's no such thing as kibud av aim. Okay? So he's not in violation of any halachas, but it's shayach to say that the reason Hashem put these mitzvahs in the Torah is because he wants people to know about them and to do them. I don't know. It's a thought. All right. So you have to cheshbon. It's every Rebbe in whatever setting he's in has to really try hard to say that he's doing what's best for the student. The number one job of the Rebbe, as we talked about, we had a whole shiur yesterday about the Rebbe has to go to Golis for the Talmud because it's the Rebbe's job to look after his Talmidim and to give them what they need. You know, it's the same thing. If the Rebbe wants to say a fourth year level base medrash pilpul shiur, and he's teaching a mid range 10th grade shiur in high school, so he's not doing his students any favors. you have to teach the students what they need to learn. You have to talk to the students the way they need to be spoken to. So you have to cheshbon. But it's not so poshut that just being one of the guys is helping the students to the utmost. Every case is different. Meaning if you're teaching in a Baal Tshuva yeshiva, for kids who know nothing about nothing, so you're going to sit there till the kid stands up for you. First of all, you're going to wait a real long time because he doesn't know. And second of all, the kid's just going to think you're a jerk. He's going to be like, who is this rabbi who thinks he's such hot stuff? The answer might be that the rabbi Taka is hot stuff, but the kid's never going to know that. The kid's just going to think you're mean. So you have to teach it in a way that it gets taught. You can't, it's a very important yisod for teachers in general. There's a cute comic strip that I once saw that a kid standing next to his dog, and he says, look, I taught my dog how to whistle. So the friend says, I don't hear him whistling. So he says, what do you mean? I said I taught him how to whistle. I didn't say he learned it, right? So there's no godless in covering and teaching and just, giving over something if there's nobody there to be mekabel it, right? So you didn't teach anybody anything. You set it over to the wall. That doesn't help. The wall knows the Gemara now. It doesn't really help the students so well. So you have to give the students what they need, right? Rav Simcha Wasserman was Rav Elchanan's son. He was known as a great, I'm sure he was a great Talmud Chacham also, but he was known as a tremendous expert in areas of chinuch. So his line was that the Rebbe's not allowed to take up any space. He said that in the terms of who gets all the space, who gets all the koach put into them, the Rebbe has no right to take up his own space and to make his own cheshbonus for what's better for him. He has to make a cheshbon for what's better for the students. So sometimes what's better for the students is for him to be one of the guys and to be mochel on his kavod, and sometimes what's better for the students is for him to be very makbid on his kavod. And most of the time, it's probably somewhere in the middle. Most of the time, it's probably, certain level of mechila, with reminding the kids that there is a mitzvah of kavod haTorah, and they should observe it. The best, to me, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong about this, to me, the best case scenario in the world nowadays for the modern kid is that the Rebbe should be mochel and the kid should be makbid. That the Rebbe shouldn't ask, and the kid should realize from the fact the Rebbe doesn't ask, the Rebbe deserves the kavod. But okay, that's a pipe dream. That's a.
Matt Tied, somebody wrote a article about how the certain rabbi was mochel on his kavod so much, that the rabbi became a friend. And they start calling him nicknames and stuff. It's a whole controversy.
Yeah, you have to use seichel like everything in life. Everything in life, it's a it's everything in life has to be done b'seichel. What?
Short story.
Yeah. Okay. Good enough. Okay. Getting back here, so Tosfos is saying that there's a chilik between shelo lishma for kavod and shelo lishma for trying to get people to think that you're a big Talmud Chacham versus Shalol Lishma of Lekanter and Shalol Lishma Shalol Almanas Lasos, meaning a guy who wants to do well on a test. True, his Iker Kavana is not L'shem Shemayim, but he's not going to learn, let's say he's learning Maseches Shabbos, he's not going to not keep what he learns if he learns that there's a special halach on Shabbos. He's planning on keeping it. True, if there wasn't a big test, he wouldn't be studying as hard, but sof kol sof, he's going to keep the halachas that he learns. Mashenkein, a person is lomed out, shelo amenas lasos, he has no intention of following any of these halachas, he just wants to read the books for the sake of reading the book, or only do it for the test and not observe any of the halachas. So that's what the Gemara means when it says noach lo shelo nivra. So laniyas daiti, you could argue that that's also a good geder for a Talmud Sheino Hagun. A Talmud Sheino Hagun, meaning a student who's not fit. So what are we saying? That he's, if you say that he's not going to gain anything from the learning, he's just going to be, you know, a contrarian and try to argue everything and try to make trouble, or he just, you know, so that's a guy that we say is a Talmud Sheino Hagun, you shouldn't teach that Talmud. Mashen Kein, if you have a Talmud who, yes, of course he's learning Shelo Lishma, and maybe he doesn't have the best, you know, the best intentions overall, but Sof Kol Sof, he's going to gain a lot from the Torah. He wants to be the top guy in the shir. So he's going to, you know, come early to Seder and stay late, and he's going to really, you know, chazer over a bunch of times and work hard, and he's going to argue in shir and try to slug up the whole svara. He's going to work really hard in the shir. Yes, his intentions are definitely Shelo Lishma, but he's still on the track that we want him to be on. So if you have a Talmud who's on that track of trying to grow in Torah, of course there's a mixture of ulterior motives in there, but that's a Talmud that you should teach Torah to. Mashenkin, if you have a Talmud he's entirely off the track of what we're trying to teach in terms of Torah, you know, so then that's the type of Talmud you're not allowed to teach. Perhaps that's a good gather for a Talmud Hagun versus Talmud Sheino Hagun. But along these same lines, the Derech Hashem has a very interesting Hagdara for teaching Torah. Meaning, and the Derech Hashem quotes other Gemaras. There's two other Gemaras that talk about teaching a Talmud Sheino Hagun, and they use harsher Lashon than our Gemara. Our Gemara basically says, don't teach a Talmud Sheino Hagun. And the other Gemara say, like, it's Ki'ilu, you worship, you threw an Evan to the Markulis. That's like one of those Avodah Zarahs that you use stones for. To worship with stones. He says, like, if you teach a Talmud Sheino Hagun, it's literally like you helped worship Avodah Zarah. Saying that's a pretty serious accusation, you know, for a person just teaching a student Torah. So the Ramchal points out from the Medrash in Eicha that the Medrash in Eicha says that the famous line that that they were Ozev my Torah, the Ozvu Torasi, right, that they abandoned my Torah. So they use such a lashon of ozvu osiv ozvu torasi, something to that effect. I'm messing up the lashon, but they abandoned me and they abandoned my Torah. So the Medrash says halavai osi tazovu v'torasi taasu, right? Meaning halavai, you should have abandoned me, says Hashem, but you should have continued in my Torah, should have done my mitzvos and kept and learned my Torah. Why? So because sha'or sheba tachsiram lemutav, that the ingredients in the Torah is going to eventually bring you back to the proper path. This is the idea that the Ramchal points out, that even though you're not allowed to teach a Talmud Sheino Hagun, you should still realize that the koach of the Torah is the ikar, what brings people back. There's nothing else that can really work. As we know, the Gemara tells us, Hashem says, Barasi Yetzirahara, Barasi Torah Tavlin. I created a Yetzirahara, and the solution is the Torah. The Ramchal in the Mesilas Yesharim points out that if you go to a doctor and he tells you that the cure for your disease is you have to take this type of antibiotic, so what are you going to do? If you're smart, you go to the pharmacy, take that type of antibiotic. If you're not smart, you'll just say, oh, well, you know, I'll just go buy myself a home chemistry set and, you know, just make up my own concoction and I'll take that. Like, what kind of nonsense is that? You don't have a medical degree. You don't have a chemistry degree. You don't have anything. Like, you don't know anything. Chazal are telling you that Hashem said, I created the Yetzer Hara. It's my Yetzer Hara. I know what the cure is because I'm the one who made it. And I'm telling you the only medicine that's going to work is Torah. So you want to go seek out other cures? You want to meditate? You want to bang your head against the wall? Good luck. It's not going to work. So what the Ramchal says in Derech Hashem is that the real antidote for a Talmud Sheino Hagun is to learn Torah. So it's one of these catch-22s that we have, that on one hand, if you want to have a Talmud, first you have to get him on the right track. You have to infect the Sur Me Rav Asei Tov. I mentioned yesterday that this is something which is very, very much lost on today's chinuch. There's virtually no concept of Sur Me Ra. There's only Asei Tov. Right? In other words, if a guy is not doing well, we say, oh, come to night seder, come do this mitzvah, come do that chesed, do that. And eventually, you know, you'll kick away the ra. And unfortunately, I haven't been in chinuch that long, but I have seen that lack of sur me ra hurts people very, very severely in the long run. People who don't have to ever develop self-control, they just try to overcompensate for the ra with more tov. Right? That does not work well. They have a lifetime deficiency in that area. And even good, wonderful, B'nai Torah-type Jews sometimes end up slipping in a horrible, horrible way because they've never trained themselves in Sur Meirah. They only did Asei Tov. It's not so posh. The Pasuk says, Sur Meirah and then Asei Tov, not the other way around. But the Ramchal points out, unfortunately or fortunately, the way Hashem made the world, Sur Meirah sometimes has to be preceded by Torah. Because otherwise the guy's not even going to have a shaykhus to Sur Meirah, because he's going to be such a slave to his Yetzer Hara. You have to first learn Torah in order to become a Talmud Hagun. So I think that's the mahalach that most of us use Bizman Hazeh, that if you have a Talmud Sheino Hagun, first you got to get some Torah into his kishkes a little bit, try to get some Torah inside of him, and that will hopefully light him up a little bit so that he can engage in Sur Meirah and eventually be a true Asei Tov. But yet, you can't forget any of those key ingredients. You can't forget the Torah part, you can't forget the Sur Meirah part, and you know, obviously Asei Tov is hopefully the natural result. Okay, that's what I wanted to say about a Talmud She'eino Hagun. All right, I just want to raise one issue. I'm not going to solve the problem today, but hopefully I just raise the issue and we'll work on it, Bezras Hashem, either tomorrow or on Thursday. The Gemara points out a chilik between the Arei Leviim and the Arei Leviim and the Arei Miklat is what? Who remembers what the chilik is? Yeah. Right. So in other words, the Arei Miklat will be kolit you no matter what, even if you don't have das upon entering them. Right. Whereas the Arei Leviim, if you have das, they'll be kolit. If you don't have das, they will not. So, first of all, we have to ask ourselves a question. Why on earth does this chilik exist? Right? What does that even mean? Second of all, we have to ask ourselves the question, what is das in this case?
How do you show it?
How do you demonstrate das? Or even if you don't have to demonstrate it, what das do you actually require? So these are two important questions that we have to answer. So, to start with, just want to list off a couple of other nafkaminas between the Arei Miklat and the Arei Halevim that are mentioned in the poskim. So for starters, we said that the Gemara on Daf Yud Gimel quotes Shitas Rabbi Yehuda, I believe, that the it's the very bottom of Yud Beis Amud Beis. You can turn to it for a second. The very bottom of Yud Beis Amud Beis to the top of Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, it's a Mishnah. It says, the Mishnah on Yud Beis Amud Beis starts, Kayotze bo, Rotzeach shegar gola le'ir miklato, v'ratzu anshe ha'ir l'chabdo, yom alem rotzeach ani. Omer lo afal pichein, yikabo mehem, shenemar v'zed var ha-rotzeach. Right? So he says, interestingly, that if they know that you're a rotzeach and they still want to give you covet, you're allowed to take it. Then it says, ma'alim ha'yu schar le'levim. They used to pay rent to the Levim. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir Omer, lo hayu malim lehem schar. Right? So he says, Rabbi Meir's shita is that they did not used to pay rent. However, as we know, I mentioned this yesterday in Shir also, that we generally do not passing like Rabbi Meir, we passing like Rabbi Yehuda, that we did give schar to the Levium. They paid rent to live in the Arei Levium. But that only applies to the 42 Arei Levium, does not apply to the Arei Miklat proper. So nafkamina number one, do you need das when you go in? Nafkamina number two, did you have to pay rent? In the Arei Miklat proper, you did not have to pay rent. And in the Arei Levium, you did have to pay rent. Nafkamina number three is brought down by the Minchas Chinuch. Minchas Chinuch is found in Mitzvah Tuf Yud, Os Yud Gimel. quoting from the Or HaChaim HaKadosh on Chumash. The Or HaChaim is found in Bamidbar, Perek Lamed Hei, Pasuk Vav. Says an interesting thing, and the Minchas Chinuch points out at the end, he's not sure about this Nafgamina because there's no Makor for it anywhere. Just the Or HaChaim writing it on his own. He says that let's say you have a situation where there's no more room in an Ir Miklat. Who has to leave? Who gets kicked out of the Ir Miklat if there's no more space? So if you're saying that it's one of the six Ari Miklat, then the Leviim have to leave. The Leviim have to get kicked out, and not the Rotzchim. However, if it's one of the regular Ari Leviim, then the Leviim can kick the Rotzchim out and say, you guys have to go live somewhere else. This is our city. So the Rechaim HaKadosh points out that that's another nafkamina, who stays and who goes. If the city gets overrun by murderers, the Leviim can say, you know, we don't have enough room for ourselves to live, and you guys have to go live somewhere else. Mashen came in the other case where we say that the Leviim have to leave. A couple of other nafkaminas quoted in the Orach HaShulchan. The Orach HaShulchan writes that we don't do a lot of these things that we listed on here on Daf Yud for the Ari Leviim, we just do them for the Ari Miklat. What did we say? That you have to make sure that the market is working properly, and we have to make sure that there's water in there, there's a proper irrigation system, and we have to bus in Kohanim Leviim and Yisraelim to make sure that that everybody's there. So he says none of those apply to the regular 42 Ari Leviim, they only apply to the 6 Ari Miklat. So those are the nafkaminas that we have between the two. There's probably others, but those are the ones that I saw on the books. What time is it? 25? Okay, so let me just mention the machlokes between the Ritva and Rashi, and then we'll call it a day. So we said, getting back now, you'll see how this background plays out in terms of understanding the machlokes. We had a machlokes in the Rishonim, what constitutes das? What constitutes das when you enter the Ir Miklat versus when you enter the Ari Leviim, that you need for the Ari Leviim, that you don't need for the Ari Miklat? So the Rashi says, on the daf here, says that if you don't have das, that you want to be protected, then you don't need that kind of das for the Ari Miklat, but you do need it for the Ari Leviim, right? Rashi, it's the last wide line on the top. Bein l'das, bein shelo l'das. Bein shebarach sham l'das klita, bein shelo barach sham l'das klita, shelo haya yodea shei koletas. You went in there, you knew exactly what you were doing, you just didn't know that this was actually an Ir Miklat. You didn't know that the Ari Leviim worked for you. Mashen came, the Ritva has a short little piece there where he says that even if you went in there while you were asleep, he says, let's say somebody was carrying you, let's say you were on a horseback or you were in a wagon, you went in there asleep, if it was a Ir Miklat, then it's kolet shelo l'das, and if it's Ari Leviim, then it's only kolet l'das. The question is, why does Rashi require that you know where you're going, whereas the Ritva doesn't require that? And question number two is, once we answer that one, then why don't you need it for the Ari Miklat, and you do need it for the Ari Leviim? So we'll have to save this for a later date. Anyway, have a good day, guys.